나자이다나브라마니다나야야데이다고다나시바사디고
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on November 2nd, 1986 at New Panihati Dham in Atlanta, Georgia.The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22, Verse 36.
Translation by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Bhoicharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We accept as blessings different states of higher life, distinguishing them from lower states of life.But we should know that such distinctions exist only in relation to the interchange of the modes of material nature. Actually, these states of life have no permanent existence, for all of them will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. Translation the purport by His Divine Grace Śrīla Bhoicharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. It's a very long purport, so I may break it up a little bit.In our material existence, we accept a higher form of life as a blessing and a lower form as a curse. This distinction of higher and lower only exists as long as the different material qualities, gunas, interact. In other words, by our good activities, we are elevated to the higher planetary systems or to a higher standard of life, good education, beautiful body, etc.These are the results of pious activities. Similarly, by impious activities, we remain illiterate, get ugly bodies, a poor standard of living, etc. But all these different states of life are under the laws of material nature through the interaction of the qualities of goodness, passion, and ignorance. However, all these qualities will cease to act at the time of the dissolution of the entire material manifestation.The Lord therefore says in Bhagavad Gita 8:16, Abrahma bhuvana loka punarvitino arjuna mamupete tukunteya punarjanamana vidyate. Even though we elevate ourselves to the highest planetary system by the scientific advancement of knowledge or by the religious principles of life,great sacrifices and fruitive activities. At the time of dissolution, these higher planetary systems and life on them will be destroyed. In this verse, the word Isha, Vidvang, Sita, Shisham indicate that all such blessings will be destroyed by the Supreme Controller. We will not be protected. Our bodies, either in this planet or in another planet, will be destroyed.And again, we have to remain for millions of years in an unconscious state within the body of Mahavishnu. And again, when the creation is manifested, we have to take birth in different species of life and begin our activities. Therefore, we should not be satisfied simply by a promotion to the higher planetary systems. We should try to get out of the material cosmic manifestation, go to the spiritual world and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is our highest achievement. We should not be attracted by anything material, higher or lower, but should consider them all on the same level. Our real engagement should be in inquiring about the real purpose of life and rendering devotional service to the Lord. Thus we will be eternally blessed in our spiritual activities full of knowledge and bliss.
Jai Sisi Nitai Gaura Ki.Radha Madana Mohana Ki Jagannath Subhadra Baladeva Ki.
People work very hard to get a higher standard of living. Especially here in America, we find that sometimes people, even husband and wife, are both holding jobs, working double time. And the normalThe purpose for that is they're always trying to get a higher standard of living. This is the nature in the material world. We consider that a more comfortable living, this is the perfection of life, this is the highest goal. Of course, even when people get a relatively higher standard of living, good education, good body, good looks, good, nice facilities, still, that doesn't completely satisfy all their aspirations. Sometimes they might give in charity, considering the welfare of those who are less fortunate, or considering maybe that will protect them in the future from losing their good fortune. But actually, the Bhagavatam, being the text on pure spiritual knowledge, is enthusing us that we should not simply become infatuated with higher standards of material life, because the entire material creation, in any case, even if we achieve the highest planet in the material world or the highest standard of material life, eventually the entire material world is going to, in any case, be wound up. And all the living entities who have not developed their dormant God consciousness, they again have to also be destroyed. Their material situation will be destroyed, and they take shelter in the body of the Mahavishnu for some period of time, millions and millions of years, in an unconscious state. So that actually, whether, of course, we don't have to wait that long. Right now, in this material world, in this planet, people are going to die a lot sooner than the wind-up of the material world. And whether one's the President of the United States, or whether one's the richest man, these things are neither permanent nor able to protect us from the ultimate miseries of material life. Of course, it's interesting to note that even the economic situation is such that even some multi-billionaires can lose their fortune in a matter of months at the present time. It's like there's one big family in Texas that had $8 billion, and just due to change in the investment climate or whatever in certain of their holdings, they lost practically all of their wealth, and now they're in debt, from $8 billion to in debt. So the material world is a very flickering place. This was explained by Govinda Das, Jivana Tala Mala Kamala Dala Jala, that the material world, life in this material world, is something about as steady as a drop of water on a lotus leaf. Lotus leaves float on top of the water, and they're very lubricated. They have some type of waterproofing on them, provided by nature. So a drop of water beads up when it's on top of a lotus leaf, but because the lotus leaf is floating in the water, which is constantly moving, a little drop of water is just skimmering here and there. It's never steady. So if you try to balance it on such a moving surface, it's very difficult. But Govinda Das said, well, your material life is about that steady. Everything may be real well figured out, but then the very nature of the material world is that it's always fluctuating and moving. Krishna explained it in two words, Dukalayam Asaswatam, a place of suffering and a temporary world. So whatever we do for happiness eventually also brings with it anxiety and suffering. But one can say, well, by having a very good material, higher situation, there's less suffering and there's more happiness, there's more comfort. So therefore, this is a blessing. But here, Prithu Maharaj and four Kumaras are discussing this topic for the welfare of the human race. for the welfare of the world. And this was their conclusion, that someone should engage rather in devotional service, that they should try to become Krishna conscious through bhakti yoga, not be overly attached to the material success that one may have, because that success, if we have that type of situation, then rather better to use it for Krishna, because it's not dependable. Whether at the end of this life or the material, or somehow, you're not going to be able to keep whatever material success you have. So whatever situation you have, if you have a situation which enables you to perform devotional service, then immediately take advantage of it, because that is what's going to remain with you. That's your permanent asset. That is the actual highest perfection of life. So I'll continue with the purport here. Regulated human civilization promotes dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. In human society, there must be religion. Without religion, human society is only animal society. Economic development and sense gratification must be based upon religious principles. When religion, economic development, and sense gratification are adjusted, liberation from this material birth, death, old age, and disease is assured. In the present age of Kali, however, there is no question of religion and liberation. People have taken interest only in economic development and sense gratification. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada continues, despite sufficient economic development all over the world, dealings in human society have become almost animalistic. When everything becomes grossly animalistic, dissolution takes place. This dissolution is to be accepted as Isha Vidvangsita Shisham. The Lord's so-called blessings of economic development and sense gratification will be conclusively dissolved by destruction. At the end of this Kali Yuga, the Lord will appear as the incarnation of Kalki, and his only business will be to kill all human beings on the surface of the globe. After that killing, another golden age will begin. We should therefore know that our material activities are just like childish play. Children may play on the beach, and the father will sit and watch this childish play, the constructions of buildings with sand and the constructions of walls and so many things. But finally, the father will ask the children to come. Then everything is destroyed. Persons who are too much addicted to the childish activities of economic development and sense gratification are sometimes especially favored by the Lord when he destroys their construction of these things. It is said by the Lord, Yasyaham anugrinami harishyetad dhanam sanai. The Lord told Yudhishthir Maharaj that his special favor is shown to his devotees when he takes away all the devotees' material opulences. Generally, therefore, it is experienced that Vaishnavas are not very opulent in the material sense. When a Vaishnava pure devotee tries to be materially opulent and at the same time desires to serve the Supreme Lord, his devotional service is checked. The Lord, in order to show him a special favor, destroys his so-called economic development and material opulences. Thus, the devotee, being frustrated in his repeated attempts at economic development, ultimately takes solid shelter under the lotus feet of the Lord. This kind of action may also be accepted at Isha Vidvang Sita Shisham, whereby the Lord destroys one's material opulences but enriches one in spiritual understanding. In the course of our preaching work, we sometimes see that materialistic persons come to us and offer their obeisances to take blessings, which means that they want more and more material opulences. If such material opulences are checked, such persons are no longer interested in offering obeisances to the devotees. Such materialistic persons are always concerned about their economic development. They offer obeisances to saintly persons or the Supreme Lord and give something in charity for preaching work with a view that they will be rewarded with further economic development. However, when one is sincere in his devotional service, the Lord obliges the devotee to give up his material development and completely surrender unto him. Because the Lord does not give blessings of material opulence to his devotee, people are afraid of worshipping Lord Vishnu, because they see that the Vaishnavas, who are worshippers of Lord Vishnu, are poor in superficial material opulences. Such materialistic persons, however, get immense opportunity for economic development by worshipping Lord Shiva. For Lord Shiva is the husband of the goddess Durga, the proprietor of this universe. By the grace of Lord Shiva, a devotee gets the opportunity to be blessed by the goddess Durga. Ravana, for example, was a great worshipper and devotee of Lord Shiva. And in return, he got all the blessings of goddess Durga, so much so that his whole kingdom was constructed of golden buildings. In Brazil, in this present age, huge quantities of gold have been found, and from historical references in the Puranas, we can guess safely that this was Ravana's kingdom. This kingdom was, however, destroyed by Lord Ramachandra. By studying such incidents, we can understand the full meaning of Isha Vidvang Sita Shisham. The Lord does not bestow material blessings upon the devotees, for they may be entrapped again in this material world by continuous birth, death, old age, and disease. Due to materialistic opulences, persons like Ravana become puffed up for sense gratification. Ravana even dared kidnap Sita, who was both the wife of Lord Ramachandra and the goddess of fortune, thinking that he would be able to enjoy the pleasure potency of the Lord. But actually, by such action, Ravana became Vidvangsita, or ruined. At the present moment, human civilization is too much attached to economic and sense gratification, and is therefore nearing the path of ruination. Thus end text 36, chapter 22, canto 4, Bhaktivedanta translation and purports of the Srimad Bhagavatam in the matter entitled Prithu Maharaj's Meeting with the Kumaras. So, when a person, or a devotee rather, wants to have a lot of economic development for a comfortable life, at the same time hold some desire to serve Krishna, that sometimes Krishna gives special mercy when he pops the bubble of that illusion that by your economic development you're going to have some kind of comfortable situation. Because with economic development, the material problems don't end, they simply change. Only by developing Krishna consciousness do actual material problems cease. And sometimes a devotee, with a sincere desire for serving Krishna, wants to have money and then use that to serve Krishna. But then while in the act of making money, they may again get into a fruitive attitude and forget their duty to, that actually their purpose was to serve Krishna, and they get involved into a postponement of their obligations to Krishna. There's one devotee of Lord Chaitanya who was actually quite a poor devotee. He wasn't very rich. His name was Sridhar, and his business was selling bananas in Navadvip. But selling bananas in Navadvip is like selling coals in Newcastle, because bananas grow everywhere in Bengal. It's like, but nonetheless, that was his occupation. So if anyone needed any extra bananas, or then they would buy from him. So he would daily take his bananas and his what do you call mocha? That means tore the flower and the core of the banana tree to the market, and the green plantains and so on. And Lord Chaitanya, as a small child, would go, and because he was a Brahmin boy, he'd go shopping for the parents. They weren't doing agriculture, he was doing studies, and his father was teaching. So he would buy the banana things from Kolavacha Sridhar, and they would always have some discourses. Lord Chaitanya would say, how much is a banana? And he'd say, well, it's so many corn shells. In those days, the money was just little corn shells or kuris. And that one coin was worth unlimited, I mean, just incredible numbers of corn shells. You could buy bananas just for a few corn shells. But then Lord Chaitanya would say, oh, you're trying to overcharge. And Kolavacha said, no, no, you can check the market, this is the proper rate. And he wouldn't overcharge, he'd always charge the right rate. And Lord Chaitanya would go, because Lord Chaitanya was... this Kolaracha Sridhar was actually an eternal devotee of the Lord who came in different pastimes and provided vegetables for the Lord. But, so at that time, Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya hadn't revealed his nature as the incarnation of Godhead in the form of devotee. But in any case, he was enjoying these youthful pastimes with Kolaracha Sridhar. And so then he would get into like a little arguing with him. That, no, you're overcharging. I'm a poor brahmana and you're trying to cheat me. You're trying to take double the price. Why don't you take the half price? Then he said, no, you check the market. I'm only asking the proper price. I'm not trying to cheat you. So then Lord Chaitanya would be looking at the bananas and then he'd throw half the money back and then he'd walk off. Take it. Hey, what are you doing? Come on, bring back those bananas. Kolaracha just would grab back the bananas. And then Lord Chaitanya said, what do you think? You think I don't want to pay? Is that you're offending a brahmana? In this way, then Kolaracha Sridhar would get a little bit worried, you know. Then Lord Chaitanya grab him back and walk off. Then this way they're having all kind of little daily pastimes between Kolaracha. The Kolaracha was actually blessed in this way by Lord Chaitanya because he was a very serious devotee. Whatever he would earn, he would spend 50% to worshipping the Ganges. That was his particular service to Krishna. His income was so poor that his worship meant that he'd buy some incense, a little ghee wick, and a few, whatever. It was such a small income that 50% would only buy a little bit to worship the Ganges. A little fruit thing, and offer that to the Ganges, and do a little puja every morning. So, then the other 50% he would maintain his family. In this way he'd work in the field and grow his bananas and go and sell them in the market. And every day he would chant Hare Krishna. So the local people, they would advise him that, listen, Kolaracha, you're just kind of stagnating here, you're not making any additional money, why don't you... just hold off on this Ganges worship for a year. Build up your capital. Get a little bit more land. You know, reinvest and then so on. So then you can double your profit. And you can do a big puja to Mother Ganges. But Kolaracha Sridhar, he said, well, if I stop worshipping Krishna now, then maybe after 1 year things won't work out the way it was planned. And then again I may postpone. And this way I may not begin again worshipping. I may get out of the habit altogether and then I'll lose whatever devotional service I have. So this is too dangerous. I can't risk it. I better just stick to this principle of worshipping every day. And I'm working hard. If Krishna wants to send me more money, he'll send it. I'm working. I'm putting in my good days work. Whatever income he sends, I'm taking. And with that, I'll worship the Ganges and I'll maintain my household. No, but look at your clothes, they've got holes in it. Look at your dhoti, it's got holes in it. We could have a good cloth, give a nice sari to your wife and everything. Well, so my cloth has a little hole in it, but that at least I have cloth on my body. And anyway, it's a little bit cooler in the hot weather. A little sense of humor there. I said, no, but look at your house, it's got a hole in it. Said, yes, but that allows for a little sunlight to come in the roof. Said, oh, you're crazy. And then he just walked off, you know, criticizing him, you know, his fanatical Hare Krishna. So then, Kolaracha, he would chant every night Hare Krishna with a few devotees in his house. But then these other materialistic neighbors, they'd always criticize. Why is this guy always shouting out in the night, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Someone else said, well, what do you expect? He doesn't have enough food, he can't sleep, he's just crying for hunger. He's got bellyache. So, they never give him a break at all. But he didn't care, he was pretty thick-skinned for all these criticisms. But he was quite happy chanting Hare Krishna. serving Krishna. So, when Lord Chaitanya, after delivering the Chankazi, he and all of his devotees, they went to the house of Kolavicha Sridhar, because he had a very nice garden there, mangoes and different trees. It was very beautiful. Although that's kind of a contrast. I see that, of course, in India, they're always giving great propaganda that people are so poor. And in fact, some of the people don't have, a lot of the modern opulences, like, if they get a 2-in-1 or something, that's a really big thing, a new bicycle. But in terms of natural opulence, having a beautiful scenery where they live and nice trees and fresh water. Actually, they're in a you can drink the water right from the well. And it's a very nice situation in that sense. And they get allured sometimes. Prabhupada went to visit Panihati on several occasions. One occasion, we were driving out to Panihati from Calcutta. And on the roadside, it's all industries and busties and slums, and it's just horrible. And he said, 50 years ago, we used to come on this road, and these were all what they call bagan buddies. They were all like country estates of big industrialists and Britishers and so on, with very beautiful, very opulent, very gardens and everything. And now it's just like hell. See, this is the thing, he said, they attract the people to come from the village where they have their trees and their cows and their land, but they're not getting a big cash flow, but they're self-sufficient. But they invite them to come on the allurement of getting 600 rupees a month. Then they can work in a factory. Then they have to work all day in this hellish situation with all kind of machines. And they live in some slum little compact area. So because it's so hellish on their mind, they have to drink. Then when they're drinking, then their friends say, come on, let's have a game of cards. Then they gamble away their money. Then the children are running in the street and just getting run over by cars, and they're just living in this slum thing, and they become antisocial kind of kids because they grow up in this hellish situation. And so where they have this almost heavenly situation in the village, but they, because of, various kinds of conditioning and propaganda, that you get 600 rupees, that's $40 a month. I mean, you know how much money that is? $40 a month? It's a buck and a half a day, come on. If you just come and work in the factory in the city. In India, in the village, you only make 200 rupees a month. So if you get 600, but 600 in the city is nothing. So in this way, the people get tricked by Maya. And there's exodus from the village to go into the cities. But then as a result, their morality and everything goes down, and crime increases and so on. So Prabhupada was saying, we want to preserve the dignity of the agricultural and rural life. That Krishna and Balaram, especially, it's dear to them. Balaram has the plow, and Krishna has the butter churner. So we want to preserve the dignity of the people in the country, that they can be self-sufficient, and they can know that it's actually a better type of life than living in these hellish cities. So Kolavicha Sridhar, he wasn't, of course, that time there wasn't the big industry revolution, but neither was he willing to compromise. So when Lord Chaitanya took his Sankirtan party after the victory over Chankazi, they all went there and they rested in his orchards. So then Lord Chaitanya said, I'm thirsty, I want some water. And then Kolavicha Sridhar was so poor that all he had was a kind of a steel pot. A steel cup. It was actually not steel, but iron. And it was a little bit cracked. So then Lord Chaitanya was looking, and he saw the water pot and saw the iron cup. So he said, oh, there's that cup. And then Kolavicha said, no, I'll go get a cup from next door. They got a nice brass one. This one's no good. Of course, it's interesting to note that even a poor man then would use steel or iron. And then what was good was considered the brass or silver. Nowadays, we have aluminum, plastic, which they wouldn't even touch, wouldn't even consider as worthy of using. And then those days. But anyway, Kolavicha, he went to try to get the brass, and then he saw Lord Chaitanya was heading for the iron cup. So he went and said, no, don't take this. And he picked it up and said, I'll get you a good cup, don't worry. He said, no, I'm not worried, give me that cup, that's quite all right. And then He said, no. He just forcibly grabbed it away from Kolavecchia Sridhar. The Lord Chaitanya is 7 feet tall, long arms. It's very hard for Kolavecchia, you know, he's can't reach him. So then Lord Chaitanya poured the water, and then just took some of the water. He said, oh, this is the best water I've ever had. Lord Chaitanya, he would appreciate the determination of different devotees. He appreciated the determination of a devotee, even though they were materially in difficult times when they wouldn't sacrifice their devotional service. And he used them as examples that, look at this person, although materially is a bit stretched, but actually he's very happy in Krishna consciousness. Similarly also, of course, it wasn't that only you have to be like Kolavecchia Sridhar. It's not that only poor persons can engage in devotional service. But if a person actually thinks, if they have that idea in their mind, that yes, I'm going to use my wealth for Krishna, but it's actually the wealth which is going to make me happy, then Krishna may pop that bubble. But it's not wealth that makes people happy. It's Krishna consciousness that makes people happy. It's their own spiritual satisfaction that makes someone happy. Material things can only provide certain comfort, which provides certain anxieties and so on and so forth. And ultimately, due to those attachments, when we lose the things, then we are more frustrated. We have a nice situation, when it gets disturbed, then we get more frustrated. So voluntarily, devotees live in a simple way. They don't want to expand beyond necessity their material situation, because by expanding, that simply expands the headaches and later on the anxieties and troubles. Of course, in some situations, the person may be, it's like Yudhisthira, he was the emperor of the world. What choice did he have? Krishna said, I want you to manage the world. So to be the emperor, he had to have a palace. It wasn't like he could live in a grass hut. He had to have an army, had to have elephants, had to have soldiers, had to have taxes and ministers and so many things. Similarly, there were devotees of Lord Chaitanya who had all types of material facilities. But those who were truly detached to those facilities and used them in Krishna's service, they were considered the pure devotees. The others, for instance, even Lord Chaitanya one time criticized Hiranya Mazumdar and Govardhan Mazumdar, the father and uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. They were very rich people. They paid a loan in taxes to the government, 1,200,000 gold coins. I mean, even today, that's hundreds of millions of dollars. What to speak of at that time? That was just the tax they paid, not considering the profit they made. So, that they don't always pay their taxes exactly. You know, that same thing is today. So, but they were always attached. Like when Raghunath Das wanted to become a devotee, they opposed it. They said, no, you can have the wealth and stay here and do a little puja to Krishna, and you don't have to fully dedicate yourself to serving Krishna. And in various ways, although they were overtly doing devotional service, they're actually very attached to the material situation. And in a point of where there was a choice between the two, they would always choose the material side. So Lord Chaitanya called them Vaishnav Pride. They were almost Vaishnavs. They weren't completely sold out on Krishna. I mean, they were overtly always wearing tilak and they were doing everything, but they weren't completely dedicated to Krishna to that extent. So he considered them to be almost Vaishnavs, not pure Vaishnavas. So, and the other contrast, there's Pundarik Vidyanini, who was a rich landlord who always had servants. He was carrying around in a palanquin because that was the way of the mode of travel at those days for a landlord, for a big jamindar or a lord. But actually, he was completely attached to Krishna, and he wasn't really. It would be he somehow or another he had this wealth. He didn't just artificially renounce it. He simply used it for Krishna. But actually he wasn't attached to it. It's not that when a person has wealth, they voluntarily just throw it in the river to show some kind of detachment. Detachment comes in how it's used, whether it's used for sense gratification or used for the pleasure of Krishna. In the case of the Mazumdar, they used it for both. So the Guru Chaitanya gave them a promptament, they're a Vaishnava pride. They're almost pure Vaishnavas. Because they didn't use it for only Krishna consciousness, they also, beyond what they needed to, they kind of padded their situation, beyond what was actually necessary to do. Or even if it wasn't overtly, but at least in their own consciousness, they were actually very, grew attached to that situation, to the extent that when their one of their sons wanted to be a pure, wanted to serve, they always tried to obstruct him. And they always kept this material. They, even though he was a sannyasi, they would send him money and say, here, have a nice situation. And it was, their consciousness was very much, instead of encouraging him to be a devotee, in that sense, they were encouraging him, well, to have a nice, comfortable situation. And, you know, all right, do your devotion, but, you know, this is a little bit for you. The normal kind of materialistic parental welfare consideration. So Lord Chaitanya, in a pinch, when he didn't obstruct Raghunath Das for 2 years, was taking money from his parents, was inviting Lord Chaitanya over and feeding him prasadam. And after 2 years, and suddenly Raghunath Das stopped doing that. And Lord Chaitanya said, why are you stopped doing that? He said, well, I was thinking, why am I taking money from my relatives and then feeding you? It's not my money. And, you know, I'm feeling proud that I'm giving you food, prasadam and all that, but actually it's not the proper attitude. Now that I've taken the renounced order, I should simply, I should be self-sufficient and not take money from my parents like that and just depend upon Krishna and serve you with whatever I get from my own side since I've taken this particular order. And the Lord Chaitanya said, yes, that is correct. And then at that time he started saying, yes, actually you're our father and uncle. They're almost Vaishnava, but they're not pure Vaishnavas. And since you've taken this renounced order, then so why remain dependent on the family? So Lord Chaitanya, he would have, I mean, it's very complex in the sense that there's a Varnashram situation. And on one hand, Lord Chaitanya would be very strict with those who were in the celibate, renounced orders, who were renounced their family connections in the sense of their daily activities. And he'd deal totally differently with those who were married and had wife and children. He'd sometimes name the children. He would sometimes even order them to have children. If they were hesitating and saying, no, I want you to have a child, the child will be a devotee, bless them. So many things. So depending on a particular person's situation, there would be different obligations and different utilizations. But the basic principles, they remain the same. But it's sometimes very difficult how to apply them in a particular situation. It requires great sensitivity. Therefore, one takes a spiritual master who's able to adjust the different environments and see how a person's particular situation can be best used to advance the cause of Krishna consciousness, or how a person in their particular consciousness can gradually advance in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada, he was always critical of people that when they wanted to engage in devotional service, they had this idea that all material energy is bad. So therefore, now I'm going to be a devotee, so now let me renounce all material energy and then come to Krishna without all these dirty material things. And then he said that people work hard their whole life, they accumulate some wealth, say, due to their, that's like a their transformation of energy, just like we take coal or hydroelectric power and we turn it into electricity. So they put their life's work and accumulated as money, then they give it away to all their relatives for sense gratification. They come to Krishna empty-handed. He said, what is that? He said, the principle, they should give some for their relatives and they should keep some also for Krishna. And they should keep some for themselves for emergency if they're going to be in the renounced order. Or that if someone has wealth, it's not that we cannot give to Krishna, but then there's a certain formula and one is supposed to give certain amount to Krishna and certain amount they can use for their own maintenance and maintaining whatever particular standard of living they have without unnecessarily increasing, at the same time without abruptly giving up. Prabhupada gave another example. how one time there was a famous freedom fighter called Lala Babu, I believe his name was. Maybe I have it wrong, but I think it was Lala Babu. And he was the follower of Gandhi. And Gandhi, he was very wealthy, but Gandhi criticized him and said, "We have so much wealth, you should renounce everything." So he renounced everything and tried to follow Gandhi, you know, walking in the loincloth and the stick and become very austere. But within 1 year, he died. It was such an abrupt change for him to go from a very comfortable material living to suddenly go and become just like a mendicant in the street that he, just the shock was too much for him, and he died due to just being such an abrupt change. So on the other hand, there was one Brahmana in Kurmadesh, and he approached Lord Chaitanya and said, "I want to renounce the world, give up my family, give everything up and simply follow you. I'm sick of this samsar life, of all the headaches of material life. I simply want to join you." And Lord Chaitanya blasted him and said, "Never say this again. Never do I want to hear this word from your mouth. You must stay here." And that's where he said that famous verse. Jare dako tare koho Krishna podesh amaragai guru hoya taro edesh. My dear Brahmin, you stay here and you teach everyone, your family, your village, you teach all of them about Krishna. You become a guru and you deliver your land here. This was the order of Lord Chaitanya. And don't think about giving up all this material. Whatever you have, you use that in the service of Krishna. You preach Krishna consciousness here. Don't think about giving up. Lord Chaitanya didn't like the idea of negative renunciation. This is considered dry renunciation. You think that all this material energy is bad, let me give it up. So many discussions are given here, but actually if we go into it in a more sensitive manner, it says we should accept that these states of life have no permanent existence. In other words, a person shouldn't become infatuated that because I have got some material situation, now I'm safe. Now I don't have to surrender to Krishna. In fact, this happened. I had a disciple in South America who was a fairly good devotee, it seemed. He was doing his service. Suddenly he got an inheritance from his parents, $15,000, which in that country is like a lot of money. When he got the money, he fell in Maya. He thought, "Now, you know, I became a devotee because I didn't have anything. It was no other. Now I got this. Now I can enjoy." And he took the money and went and he met prostitutes and drunk and just blew his money. Completely fell down into just like a worm in the worst situation. And then, you know, of course, once you start getting into that type of thing, money goes like anything. So a year later, he comes back completely destroyed. So, you know, no more money, no more friends, everyone leaves him, you know, gets stolen and beaten and whatever. So then he wants to be a devotee, but now he's got hardly any determination. He's completely like a basket case after surrendering to Maya. So you can see that, and this happens sometimes, a person, they think that, well, all right, material life is so bad, better to be a devotee. But then in their heart, in there they think that, you know, but if I really had a nice material facility, then I'd be happy. Then if Krishna gives them that facility, then it's like a test. Tests that come, sometimes we get misfortune, sometimes we get fortune. If someone gets a good fortune, they think, all right, I have to use, all right, these are the things I can do, I can use this for Krishna, I can also get this. Some amount of material facility can be used. But if a person gets too attached to that, then when they get it, they just forget everything and they don't use it for Krishna, and as a result, they get entangled. So the special purport here is that we should know that the material situation has no permanent existence. Therefore, we shouldn't think that, oh, because I have a comfortable situation, therefore, now I don't have to become Krishna conscious. All these are different kind of materialistic ideas. We can become Krishna conscious from any position. Now, Lord Chaitanya's advice was to do yukta vairagya. You work, you do your duty, you do your honest labor, and according to the results you get, the fruits you get, according to your karma or the blessing of Krishna, that you accept, and accordingly, you use part for your material upkeep, and you use part for Krishna. under the guidance of the spiritual master.
In other words, always keep your spiritual life. It's called yukta vairagya, meaning you use what you need to be healthy, to be able to exist, body and soul together. And the rest, whatever, if there's any surplus at all, of course some people there's hardly any surplus, but if there is any, then you can even be as dedicated as Kolavichya Sridhar. He used a very rigid formula. But somehow or another, you use energy for Krishna. Never give up your top priority as Krishna consciousness. If your top priority is material comfort and the second priority is do something for Krishna, then it's Vaishnava pride. It's almost a pure devotee. But if someone's top priority is to be Krishna conscious and second priority or is, you know, with that, just, of course, you cannot do anything unless you're alive. So you have to eat, you have to have clothing and so on. So your first priority can always say is to live and be Krishna conscious. Living without Krishna consciousness is not acceptable, but we can live and be Krishna conscious in any circumstance. That's not difficult. But then we have to adjust any additional things that come. We have to see our priorities, that we should use it in such a way that it advances ours and the cause of Krishna consciousness. In this case, a person, if he does that, they're considered as good as a sannyasi. We don't expect that everyone's going to do that, because if someone does it, they're as good as a sannyasi. Just like King Ambarish. He was doing that, so when Durvasa Muni came and tried to kill him with his curses and mystic power, instead Durvasa had to run for his life, because everything was bounced off of Ambarish and came back to attack him. Because although overtly Ambarish Maharaj was a householder and living in the material world, he was a king, but actually he had dedicated his whole existence to serving Krishna. So overtly, whatever opulence he had, it was simply for the purpose of making his kingdom Krishna conscious. So when he wasn't recognized by Durvasa, Durvasa thought he's a normal attached householder. And when he had tried to attack him, actually he was protected by Krishna, because he was in fact not an ordinary attack householder. Well, so overtly you can't see. It's very difficult just for an ordinary person to see. They may be two houses. One may be Krishna conscious and one may be in total illusion. But there's a difference, because one, the purpose is to please Krishna, and the other, the purpose is simply to please themselves. So last night we were discussing and said that some people, they get afraid. This verse is very interesting, because last night it was brought out that some people in India, they're afraid to worship Vishnu because they hear this, yasyaham anugrinami harishye tadhanam sanai, that if you worship Krishna or Vishnu, you'll lose everything. So they're afraid. So then they criticize in different way. No, if we serve Krishna, he'll take everything away. In fact, in South India, this is very common. People say, why are you worshipping Krishna? He'll take it all away. You should just worship Shiva, don't worship Krishna. So it's even one... came out that some people they may be so afraid of losing something by worshipping Krishna, so they may become critical of the Krishna conscious movement, that we follow all these people, then we'll have to give something up. But in this verse, actually the point is that whether they give it to Krishna or not, eventually they're going to lose it anyway. It's simply a matter of time. Better, if you know you're going to lose it, then better to give it. Then you don't lose. If you're going to lose something, there's a kind of a joke in Bengal, how the man was carrying puffed rice on his head, and a big wind came up and blew all the puffed rice into the air. And so then, at that time, it was going to be scattered all over. He can't use it anymore. So before it hits the ground, then he said, Urai kwe govindaya namo. Oh, puffed rice in the air, I offer you to Govinda. This is a normal thing, is that when people think, I'm going to lose something, they always come to us and say, the government has just acquired our land because we exceeded the ceiling or because we didn't pay our back taxes, and so we'd like to donate it to Krishna. But you know, it's already too late sometimes. But this is a normal time when they come to us that we'd like to donate our land. It's just been occupied by 30 communists, and we'd like to give it to you. All you have to do is get them off and you can have it. Are different, you know, there's so many things like this happen. But actually, here the advice is given that
whether, don't wait till it's just already being destroyed, because sooner or later, you're going to lose everything anyway. It's going to be destroyed. So, by the Supreme Controller. So actually, if we know that, then better to use it for Krishna now. Then whatever we have actually takes on permanence, because whatever is part of the sacrifice for Krishna, that itself becomes spiritual. So actually Prabhupada, he was very kind. He said that householders, they have a good opportunity to serve Krishna. They can use their house for preaching. And we found, just as I mentioned, there was in New Orleans, how there was one person in Brazil, and he was very inimical to the devotees, but by associating with people outside the temple, he purchased a set of books and he gradually became favorable. Still he hasn't come to the temple. I mean, there's some people who are afraid to come to the temple. They find it like another world. The deities and the chanting, and some people, they just think the kartals are too loud, and I mean, it's just, it's a big change for them. They can't, the incense smell or whatever it is, they're not able to immediately relate to it. They don't have enough spiritual credit to take advantage of the spiritual atmosphere in the temple. So Prabhupada said householders can use their homes to preach to people, bring them over for a dinner, have a nice informal chat, and then at the end kind of say, look, we're a happy family, we're Krishna conscious, this is a good way of life, why don't you also practice a little Krishna consciousness and chant, the whole family can chant together. It's not that our purpose is to break up families, rather, we like it when the whole family is Krishna conscious. I've never seen a family that's totally Krishna conscious unnecessarily break up. Rather, they stay together. It's when one person is trying to force the other person not to be Krishna conscious, and it creates a whole kind of attention. Or when someone is not patient and one person is maybe gradually coming into it, but they're trying to hurry it up faster than the person can take. These type of things cause a little bit of stress. But if everybody is basically favorable to devotional service, then even Lord Chaitanya Prabhupada, there's no need of even considering at all taking up sannyas or renouncing the family situation. I've heard Prabhupada say that many times. In fact, sannyas is not at all recommended in this age. We've had even certain bad experiences recently in the Madhva Sampradaya in South India. They've had a few problems. It's very difficult in this age. It's much more secure and recommended to be a householder in the long run. Our purpose, ultimate purpose, Prabhupada wanted us to do was establish Varnashram. He said, I've done half the work. So he made temples, he's had some, made brahmanas, made Krishna conscious communities. But then he said he wanted to expand it. He wanted to have Varnashram, he wanted to have the whole society basically more and more Krishna conscious. That means there will be many Vaishnava prize. There will be many almost Vaishnava. Everyone will not be a pure Vaishnava. There will be some people who are a little materially attached, and there will be, but to guide them, there's also a need for pure Vaishnavas living in society to show a good example and to gradually bring them around to the proper standard of Krishna consciousness. And in, as I mentioned, I think it was last night, how in Chile, there was one family that sells cars, and that they're all were chanting Hare Krishna, the whole family. And so their mission is also they're going to try to bring in other people of their economic level and to gradually take up the practice of chanting Hare Krishna. South America people are interested in yoga. They're interested in meditation, things like that. It's an in-vogue type of thing. Possibly they're a little more interested in things like that than many of the older Americans here. The younger Americans from the baby boom in the 30s, they have in the past shown quite an interest in these type of things. And I think there's a good opportunity if we are able to make them adequately understand the principles of Krishna consciousness and that they can practice from their homes, from their own situation, that we can have many people become liberated from this material illusion, from material suffering, and be able to develop their pure Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada told me personally But don't expect everyone is going to live in the temple. The temples will have a core of devotees, and there will be so many people living outside who will be practicing and coming on weekends and coming on special days, but they'll be chanting Hare Krishna in their home. He told me that in 1970, before sending me to India. Of course, living in India, there you see so many millions of people worshipping Krishna in their home. Some in pure devotion, and most of them in almost devotion, pure devotion. But at least they're worshipping, and eventually to have a type of spiritual varnashram in the West, at least the people first have to become somewhat devoted. And I was very encouraged when I read the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the description of Lord Chaitanya's tree. There Lord Chaitanya described his tree as having so many branches and twigs and leaves. And Prabhupada explained that the Krishna conscious movement is one of the branches of Lord Chaitanya's tree. So in the description, Lord Chaitanya said that who are the branches? He said they're the disciples and the grand disciples and the disciplic succession. And then he said there's also the Praishishyas. Praishishya, shishya means disciple, and Prai means, again, Prai, we've used that several times today, almost. Almost disciples, or followers, admirers, well-wishers, friends. We've used many. They're also part of Lord Chaitanya's tree. Lord Chaitanya accepted those even before they were initiated, but if they're aspiring, or if they're well-wishing, if they're associating with the society, he also considered them as part of his spiritual movement. So that was very encouraging, that even the very neophyte Namhata folk members also were given this blessing by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that they were part of his spiritual tree. They were actually blessed by him. Prabhupada wrote a very long purport here, because in his own life he felt very strongly about this particular topic in his own writings and occasion. He revealed that he personally felt that, because he was somewhat successful in business, had Krishna in the end not taken away a little bit his material situation, he might have delayed in surrendering completely. In other words, the material situation is a bit affects one, and sometimes one gets into the affairs. So from his point of view, out of his humility, he took it that Krishna had helped him by revealing certain things when his wife sold his Bhagavad Gita manuscripts as used paper to buy 50 cents worth of tea. And when certain things happened, they kind of revealed to him the futility of just remaining at that age of 56 in his family and trying to practice Krishna consciousness when his family members were not at all cooperative. So then he decided to take vanaprastha, and then after some years he took sannyas, so that he, at the age of 59, then he was preaching. So in his particular situation, his wife and family, they didn't cooperate. But that was Krishna's desire. Otherwise, maybe it would have been difficult for him to travel all over the world and spread Krishna consciousness if he had remained in the family. So that was his particular dharma, his particular desire, Krishna's desire for him, that gave us the opportunity of having Srila Prabhupada come to the Western world and all over the world, return back to India to spread the Krishna conscious movement in all of the continents. Although Prabhupada did say that at the same time, it's not that everyone has to take sannyas. If someone is in a proper Krishna conscious situation, they can practice Krishna consciousness there. But it's a natural desire that someone may desire, I want to do more devotional service. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wanted to take sannyas, he thought I should take sannyas. When he went to his guru said, no, you're already better than a sannyasi. You see. Some people take sannyas, but they think when I'm missing, if I was a householder, I would have a nice, comfortable life. Then what is the use of sannyas? Then you're fallen. A better, if a person is a sannyasi, is living with wife and family and children, but he's thinking, would be nicer if I was renounced. But, so I'd be able to give more time to Krishna. That person's mind is always in Krishna consciousness. But in actuality, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was thinking like that, but his guru said, no, you're using everything for Krishna. You're better than a sannyasi. You're not attached to Vihasta. You should just go on doing your preaching. So, every person's dharma is different, and we can go on discussing this topic for months. It's already late. But it's an important understanding to have a little bit of a broader vision. But normally when we just discuss either one angle or the other. So in this particular verse, Prabhupada also discussed it from different angles. Are there any questions? The point is that in this verse, when it's stated that the material situation should be disconsidered as relative, it's not an absolute situation. Whether one is a material failure or whether one is a material success, and it depends on the ultimate issue. The material situation should be considered as simply as a relative situation. If a person actually accepts Krishna consciousness, then that's eternal, that's absolute. If the material situation was an impetus to that, well, that's good. Anything that's an impetus to our being Krishna conscious is good. The real test is whether a person is absolutely dedicated. That's why some people, they may come out of poverty, they may be in distress, they come to Krishna consciousness. Then Krishna may, alright, here's an inheritance. And then if the person says, alright, here's the inheritance now, alright, so this is how I'll use it, I'll discuss with the spiritual master, maybe I buy something for Krishna, or use this, or maybe now I can, alright, I use this much for my family, and I'll let me discuss and deal with it responsibly, and then, so then, there's no material entanglement for that, there's no karma. But instead of the person says, wow, I was before suffering, now Krishna, I got this wealth, now I don't need Krishna, now let me go out and get drunk or something, then that's a big fall down. So that kind of test may happen. When Bali Maharaj had everything taken away, his wife came and said, we know this is your special mercy, you take away everything from the devotee, my husband was filled with false ego, so you cut down his ego, we're very grateful for this benediction you've given to my husband. And then Vishnu, he would let so many people speak, but when she spoke, he didn't wait. He kind of cut it right off and said, don't think this is my highest mercy. This may be a special mercy, but this is not the jackpot. This is not the top mercy. This is not the top mercy that I have to offer. You should consider the person who has got all kind of material opulence, but doesn't have false ego, is not attached to that. That he is possessing my special mercy. Someone actually, so the real ultimate, the absolute, are we generally, if someone is wealthy and someone is better off materially and they sacrifice, so we consider that from a more superficial relative viewpoint, we consider that to be very glorified. But today we're just discussing, it's getting right down to very cutting of the hairs. That, if someone has something and they give, well, that's very auspicious. You can say that's more glorified. And overtly, generally, we offer respect to that. But the ultimate issue, the final grade when it comes, whether we go back, we get pure Krishna consciousness or not, whether we develop love for Krishna or not, Krishna does see that what attachments is a person holding. So that even a person, if they have something and they give, they themselves shouldn't be personally satisfied with that, but they should rather be always trying to refine their consciousness, that whatever I do have, that in the consciousness, this is also ultimately the property of Krishna. I have to use it in a responsible way. It's not that I give Krishna this much and the rest I can just use for sense gratification. He said, that's the general attitude. Well, I'll give Krishna something, and then, like, I'm paying him off, and then I can use the rest for whatever I want. But that's not pure devotion. It may appear like pure devotion externally, but it's almost pure devotion. Pure devotion means that I give to Krishna, but then what I do have, also should use that in a responsible way. Not that I give Krishna donation, I can eat meat. I give Krishna donation, but I should still eat prasadam. I should still attend Mangalarti or chant my japa and do my other devotional service. I should use the thing. I mean, this is very common, so I'm sure you understand that. But maybe I didn't exactly get your point. Well, a person that's comfortable generally doesn't come to Krishna out of distress, although sometimes in the modern world they do, because even though they have material wealth, maybe their family life is so disturbed, or the income tax is after them, or they may come out of distress. Even though they may not come out of economic development, they may be distressed. Generally, people who are more materially comfortable, they come out of inquisitiveness. Just like there was a person that came here because he'd never been here before. He wanted to see what it was all about. He came here. He didn't stay for the class. Maybe he had something else to do. Some people come because they're inquisitive. What's it all about? What are these Hare Krishnas up to? Or someone may get the book, they study, they come out of knowledge. So whatever reason a person comes, that's auspicious. But we find that usually when people have some material well-being, they're generally a bit proud. They feel, you know, a little... So it's harder to get them to surrender. So which is a greater surrender? Even if a person has very little, they're still attached. They still think, I got something. They probably used the example of sitting in the Howrah train station in Calcutta, watching some kind of garbage pickers carrying a huge pile of half-burnt firewood on their head in a bundle, sweating and struggling with this big bundle. And the Prabhupada pointed it out and said, look, the person's carrying half-burnt firewood, which anyone else, if they threw it away, it was useless. I mean, even here we have good logs, which I say it cut up and saved for the winter for the firewood, which you couldn't use any last night in the fireplace. But here we just put it in the garbage pile and let them take it away. So for us, you know, even good wood is garbage. But in India, even half-burnt firewood is like valuable for someone. So the person was struggling, so the Prabhupada used it as an example. All the person's got ripped clothes, he's dirty, he's carrying half-burnt firewood. You could say he's like got nothing. But it's not actually. He's got his firewood. He's struggling with it. It means to him it has some value. If you tried to go there and take it from him, he'd probably get into a huge fight with you. So for even though he has almost nothing, he still has something. He has something. He's not niskinchana. So a person may have so much materially, but if he in his heart, he thinks it's all Krishna's. Ultimately, I can't take anything with me, so whatever this here is a gift of Krishna. And he's in that kind, then he's niskinchana. So niskinchana doesn't mean that you have to become a beggar like that. But niskinchana means that whether you have a little or a lot, you're in Krishna consciousness. So even a person like that, even you tell him to surrender to Krishna, he's thinking, no, I got my firewood, I got my this, I got my that, I got... He still has attachments. But generally, it makes say, well, in our temples it's a nice situation, so some people come because we offer them a nice situation. But even then, even though we offer them better food, a nice place, still, because it's surrender to Krishna, they don't come. You get some, but they don't want to serve. They just think, I come in the ashram for an easy life. In India, some people have the idea like that, that you come and live in an ashram means you don't have to work, you just sit and, you know, move a few beads and have a good life and eat a big pile of rice. And we tell them, you know, this is not the type of ashram we have. We work in the fields, we have our Gurukul schools, we have our construction, we have our art department, we have our dairy department. You have to come here, you have to work, you know, 16 hours a day for Krishna, 6 hours sleep, 2 hours eating practically. You know, these are activities of devotional service. And so the people, they don't want to come. They'd rather be lazy and just do nothing but have a little bit of independence. Yeah, generally we get educated people. Generally we get people who are a little bit intelligent. Even though we offer that, you know, get a free meal, but you don't generally get those type of, they don't want to come and surrender. So although theoretically you think that poor people could join easier, you know, you don't get the really wealthy people very easy. They're really wealthy because they're a little bit proud. But somehow you don't always get, you don't even get the really poor people all the time either. You just gotta get somebody that's a little bit of, Krishna consciousness is pretty subtle. It's pretty sublime. Generally it takes, you can get anybody from any sphere, but I said that once to Prabhupada, that we'll provide this nice facilities and just be like throwing grains in the park, all the birds will come and eat it. He said, you know, Prabhupada, he said, it's not like that. They have to have the sukriti. Unless they have the good fortune, they can't come. So it's not just a material thing that people come to Krishna consciousness. They like to think that. People always criticize. Yeah, he became Krishna consciousness. He became a sannyasi because he was too ugly to get married. No one would have him. Or, yeah, he rejected the world because he was a failure. There's a general thing that people say. There may be people that take to renounce life like that. But generally, to actually surrender to Krishna requires some little bit of special mercy. A little bit of poverty trains one up, although not voluntarily, trains one up into renunciation. It can help. So we respect it if someone who's wealthy engages in Krishna service. It's more of a sacrifice. That's why in India, when the devotees from America come, they say, you had everything. You had the wealth, the good life, and you've given it all up. We cannot give it up. You have given it up. So they respect. The pious people, they respect when people from the West, from England or America, engage in devotion. They see that they're living a very austere lifestyle, preaching Krishna consciousness. They respect that. So we always respect, it's a natural Vedic custom to respect renunciation. But that's a bit superficial, but that's our custom. We follow that social custom. Who's ever more renounced to respect? We overtly give more respect to sannyasis or brahmacharis because they're supposed to be more renounced. But in a higher spiritual viewpoint, even though a grihastha may be offering respect, like Ambarish Maharaj is offering respect, but actually in his heart, he was more renounced than Durvasa Muni. Although as a grihastha, he was giving social respect to Durvasa Muni, who was a Brahmin and he was a Kshatriya. In actual sense of it, Ambarish was more spiritually advanced. So one thing is our social custom and how we respect people who have something and they give. We naturally respond to that. If somebody gives, we give them respect. They're our life members. We give them respect. But in the ultimate, that our giving respect is one thing and Krishna's little scorecard is another thing. So a person's actual advancement of Krishna consciousness will be gauged on more than just that. But overtly, that's our custom, and that certainly Krishna also considers that. As you have something and you give it up, that's, you've given something, so you get credit. If you don't have anything, you don't give anything, you don't get any credit. But if you have something and you give. But they also say that if you have a little and they give something, then they get a proportionate credit. If a person has 1 rupee and they give 50 paisa, or a person has a million rupees and he gives 10 rupees, then who's going to get more credit? So, but if a person has good material fortune, we like to try to get them to be Krishna conscious because they've done pious activity in the past and therefore they must have some pious nature. If they can get over their false ego and become Krishna conscious, then that's going to be really beneficial for them. That's the only thing they're missing. They've already seen the material success, which is going to eventually be destroyed. So save them while they're on the upswing. Save them while they have a little better intelligence, better situation. And then they can use that energy for Krishna also. That will help others to come to Krishna consciousness. It was given by Krishna, so it should be used for Krishna. Any other question? Well, we have an Ambrish Das, the grandson of Henry Ford. The point is that so he has some millions of dollars and he invests that money. If he gave all the money just like that, then what would he do? Then he wouldn't have any more money. But by investing, when you have money, then money makes money. So he takes that and invests it, and every year he makes profit, and from that profit, he donates most of his profit. He doesn't really building up his capital as such. I don't know his personal finances, but I know that he has a regular budget. Whatever profit he makes, he gives the lion's share of that for different ISKCON projects. Last year he purchased a $2 million building in Manhattan. I don't know if we're going to use it. But, so that's the point, is a person has a particular occupation. If he has no more occupation. If he's a householder, then it's very difficult. So all these things are generally balanced by having a spiritual master, and he gives advice. He guides the life of the disciple. Otherwise, it's very difficult. Some people may fanatically say, yes, you should just renounce everything. But then a person renounces everything, that also wasn't recommended by Lord Chaitanya. You abruptly change your situation, and then just like that example I gave, the person dies. I mean, it's just too difficult, and they can't maintain. So Lord Chaitanya said, from whatever position you're in, use that position to serve Krishna. It's not that you have to change your situation to be a devotee, but rather you use them. This was the advice of, at the end of life, one may consider whether to be more renounced or not, or take vanaprastha, and husband, wife, simply engage in devotional service without having any more sex life. I mean, we read in America how they have a heart transplant at 75 years old, and after the heart transplant, he goes in the newspaper and says, now, because I got this new energy from my heart transplant, I'm so healthy. So what makes you feel you're so healthy? Well, I know I'm healthy. I just had sex with my wife, so I'm very healthy. I hadn't had that before for years. So he's 75 years old, he's ready to die, he's just almost dead, just had a heart transplant, and the first thing he does, he gets a little energy, is he has sex life. So this is like completely inconceivable to the spiritual Vedic idea of life. That a person's ready to die, he should prepare for his next life. After a certain age, even though they may have the physical capacity, but husband and wife should agree that, all right, we don't need to have any more sex life now. Let us try to use the last period of our life to gradually become a little more spiritual. And that's considered vanaprastha. They live together. But instead of cultivating that particular attitude, they cultivate friendship, and they try to develop more in their spiritual life. And the goal in the Western world is to the last, breath, just have a little bit of sense gratification. It's like, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die and it's all over. But when we understand that we are eternal and we have so many different bodies, so when we get older, it's an opportunity to become more detached. So like this, there's so many different examples. But basically, your question is a question that isn't answered in a public thing. It's a personal thing which will depend on each individual. Raghunath Das wanted to leave his family, and Lord Chaitanya told him not to leave. Told him to be Krishna conscious in the family. But later on, after some time, he later on gave permission, all right, at this point you can leave. So things may change from time to time, and that's why one has a spiritual master, because then they can see, according to a particular situation, what is the proper thing to do. But the basic principle is that one doesn't have to renounce everything to be Krishna. That is considered dry renunciation. That's rather not recommended to suddenly. But within one situation, if you have a business, your business has a cash flow, you're making a profit. From the profit, you serve Krishna. Not that you have to sell your business and then just because. And then if everyone did that, then what would? Then nothing would function. That's not a Varnashram system. That's totally impractical. In some circumstances, a person may be able to do more valuable service for the Krishna conscious movement. They may be giving so much time and energy for a business that's producing no income. Then what's the use of it? You see, all these things have to be evaluated. That what can a person do? What's their better service? Srup Damodar Maharaj was a big scientist. He could have kept on working and making $75,000 a year in the University of L.A. or something, whatever, UCLA or something. But instead, Prabhupada had him formed the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Didn't have him give up science. He was still doing science. But instead, he was doing it for the Bhaktivedanta Institute. Like this, things are adjusted. Not that people change, but in some cases, there may be a more useful or appropriate use for their service. Every devotee should be rather concerned about their own advancement and about their own attitude, rather than about the situation of others. They should be concerned about their own personal advancement. For that purpose, they can take advice. The changes should be made gradually, should be made from a position of strength to strength whenever possible. Jagannath Subhadra Balarama ki, Hitai Gaur ki, Radha Madana Mahana ki,